circles after the buzzer theme is less haunting and lyrical at, from a remote location, I think. All right, gang, here we go with another edition of After the Buzzer. And my name is Mike Gross. I am not in the man cave this week because I'm a bit under the weather. But Gordy is, as always, manning the controls and shepherding the technology in our favor. Isn't that right, Gordy?
I'm every week, as you know, is a constant wrestling match with the technology. But I'm knocking on wood here. It seems to be cooperating. So
Gordy actually has that wrestling headgear on.
I have cauliflower ear from wrestling with the technology.
but honest to goodness, we're not going to talk about wrestling. It's not a lot, unless the Iron Sheik comes up on this edition of the show. It's high school basketball season, and it started on Friday. We're speaking to you on Wednesday, so some teams have played a few games, some teams haven't played any yet.
Which is crazy to me.
That's okay, because our guest has seen these kids play in the summer, he's seen these kids play in the fall, he's around this sport as much as anybody in our area. He is Andy Herr of LLHoops.com. Andy, as I always say to our first-time guests, update your resume. And welcome to After the Buzzer.
Thank you, fellas. I appreciate the invite. Although I do have to say, as a listener of the show myself, hopefully the invite of me is not a harbinger of things to come and sort of your guys' long-term sustainability. So I'll literally try and pull my weight as best I possibly can. So,
yeah, we always try to keep an eye on sustainability. So I'm glad.
Yes,
you,
it's a green podcast. That. Yes, indeed.
I think we'll kind of go section by section here a little bit, but some teams are off to an impressive start. Big picture, Andy, are you kind of impressed with what our teams have done? Because there's a couple of them here that are off to 3-0 starts that I'm a little surprised by.
Yeah, I would say there are obviously certain examples of teams like that. Just perfect example, last night I was up at Anvil Cleona, and we kind of touched on this on our preview show, Dell and I, on LL Hoops, but I think Section 4 is going to be like a little more competitive than people may give it credit for, because obviously you have the state champs and Mennonite who reside there. Columbia looks awfully, awfully good this year, at least in the summer. Country Day is sort of that sneaky team, the fox around the hen house type of thing, where they only play in 1A. They're the only league team that plays in 1A, so they can get a lot of those power points and a good resume. But to speak on Anvil in particular, again, you're right. I mean, they totally blew the doors off of Upper Dolphin last night. They have a kid, Elias Schleyball is his name. He's averaging 22 a game now after last night. He had 30 in the opening night against Shenandoah Valley, 20 in the finale against Northern Lehigh up at their Hamburg tournament. And they have a nice little mix of inside-outside with him having the green light and then Shea inside. That's really one of the attractive teams that sort of catches my eye early on. Warwick is obviously Warwick and Cedar Crest are probably the two prohibitive favorites, I would say, to probably make it back to Mannheim Township for the league final if we had to handicap it, 5 days into the season.
Prohibitive favorite, you're saying?
I'm saying okay. So. I mean,
okay.
If I have to pick two and I can only get two slots in that game, they're my two until proven otherwise, I would say. Okay. I mean, I know you saw Warwick over the weekend at McCaskey, and what I will say that I did like with that is, although they went 1-1 in that tournament, what I liked is that game specifically in that tournament, hoping they would draw Coastal, which they did in the finale, that's a game you schedule for the back half of February, because they know what they're capable of doing in December and January, and then hopefully through the early part of February in the league playoffs. But with big things expected of them, I like them really taking that step out, because when you sort of look at the schedule, I don't know who's going to be able to look them, squarely in the eye as much as Coastal will, other than, maybe Mechanicsburg if you get to districts. So I really like that schedule that they put forth. But I would say as a whole, there's some nice little storylines developing, and Yeah, I'm just excited to see how it shapes out because it is only, we're not even a week into the season yet, but we do have some stories.
The defending league champion, Hetfield, has not played a game yet. They do play in a couple hours here, but Warwick, I was impressed with Warwick. You know, I was there Friday night, so I didn't see them play Coatesville, but seeing Coatesville, I was impressed with the way they hung around because Coatesville is deep and athletic and they have size. And they really press. And I don't know that Warwick really has a point guard, but they're kind of one of those interchangeable parts teams, which is nice. But, yeah, I was impressed with them doing that. And Chris Christensen, their coach, said when I talked to him on Friday night exactly what you said. I mean, this is a game we're playing for down the road, yeah.
It's the kind of thing McCaskey has done for years, you know, playing teams like Coatesville and Chester, you know, but especially when they were really good back in the day. They always played teams like this, and they would come out of the non-league like, you know, 3-5 or something like that, and then win the league championship. So it's a pretty good recipe for success.
Yeah, if you're expecting to be good. And even looking at, for example, Columbia played that executive education option.
Yes!
But yeah, I love that. I love the specific academic program that's right the title of school.
Is there arch rival like blue collar education, or what's the deal with that?
It's a natural rival. District 11. Yeah. So anyway, Columbia got thumped a little bit in that game. I thought that might be closer, but maybe executive education, who one of those schools that brings in guys, let's say.
What is their nickname, for God's sake? Executive education? I gotta find this.
The Raptors. They're the venture capitalists.
If it's not, it should be.
Correct. It should be, but officially they're the Raptors.
Oh, that's not even fun. That's not any fun at all.
At Columbia, 20 years ago.
But
anyway, Columbia, Andy, talk a little bit about Columbia. They should be very good as a small school, right?
I think so. Fellas, I said this to anyone who would sort of ask me what I saw in the summer. And to your point, yes, they did sort of take it on the chin last night with executive. But from what I saw in the summer, if there are 10 teams better in Pennsylvania basketball in the 3A level that are better than Columbia, I need to see them.
Wow.
I just think they have so many weapons. Braylon Miller, Artie Poindexter, Jordan Poole. I mean, I could just keep going on. Now, obviously, they did lose the Diaz-Ellis twins to McDevitt, which is another story for another day. But, you know, by and large, you're correct. The whole thing with them is what are they going to be able to do in the playoffs? Because if you remember, in the league playoffs, they had Cedar Crest firmly on the ropes at their house, and they let that one slip. And then right after that, they had that big lead against, I forget who it was in the district playoffs, but it's sort of like, what the heck was that? Were they up by like 20 points at home and let it slip? And then, as you know, especially with the way the 3A bracket is constructed on a statewide level, if you do something like that, forget about stubbing your toe. You're almost getting like an amputation because then you're going to draw Philly West Catholic in the first round, which they did.
Yeah, that's right. It's really unfortunate for Columbia, I think, because they are genuinely a good small school.
Yes,
it's a little town and a little school, and you know, in a different structure of high school sports.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I think that team they had 2 years ago really could have contended for a state championship, but they're kind of stuck in this AAA with all these private schools underneath them, private schools with them. You know, executive education is AAA, right?
I think they are. Yeah.
You know. Or maybe they're up to four now, but whatever. You see what I'm saying? I just feel like in the more traditional sort of structure, the run that Columbia's been on lately, it could have really been interesting at the state level.
It could have been. And then if you remember, when I was talking to Coach Glover after that loss against West Catholic last year, which again, West Catholic went on to win the state final, he was awesome post-game. He was super candid with everything, and he's like, listen, I'm trying to schedule, sort of like we mentioned with Warwick, like I'm trying to schedule the best possible non-con games I can, because you know, with all due respect to my divisional opponents, we're just not going to see anything like this. And
yeah, I remember him saying that, yeah.
Yeah, if we want to get a true test of what we just saw with West Catholic, we have to schedule, like, Reading, you know? Mm. Like, it's just a hard-knock life, really, living in the 3A level, because that's and even lower than that, because that's where all those, you know, Philly...
It might be tough for them to get Reading on the schedule.
Mm.
I would imagine so.
Yeah, I would think so. It's interesting to me to see the Columbia roster with a Poole and a Poindexter on it. It makes me feel like it's 1995 all over again. You know what I mean?
And a Miller, who's Johnny Miller's son.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Oh, so it is 1995 all over again.
Yeah, how about that?
So this leads me to a small digression. Years ago, Art Poindexter, who I'm assuming is this Poindexter's dad, he made like a free throw to beat somebody in a league playoff game over at CV. And I walked up to him and talked to him after the game. And rather than playing it cool, he goes, "I thought my heart was going to beat out my chest."
I loved it.
It was like there was no false bravado there. And I just loved that he came clean with that. That was just the best.
You overcame something, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's what, you know, obviously, as all three of us know, that's one of the attractions of covering high school sports, that unvarnished, you know, candor.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Andy, if we're talking about Section 4, we have to talk about Mennonite, as you mentioned them in passing. And obviously, they lost a lot from the state championship team, but they also have some significant pieces back in Miles Halverson and Chase Hurst, excuse me. And a new coach, Jeff Hartenstein. What can you tell us about them to date?
So, sort of Hartenstein, I think he's the perfect fit to get the job, not only because he was Seth Buckwalter's top assistant last year, but I didn't really know this until I was talking to Seth postgame after some of their state wins, but he really let Jeff take control of really the off-season scheduling program of like, hey, listen, we think we're going to be pretty good in the world of 2A. Let's step outside kind of our weight class in the summer. Let's go up to Allentown. Let's go down to Philly. Let's go wherever we can find games and play, you know, Constitutions and, you know, teams like that. And what's crazy to me is, yes, they are a very unassuming 1-2 as we record today.
Right.
And they had to beat La Academia by 4 last night at home. But they're... While Jeff might have been in charge of doing the off-season schedule before, like he certainly isn't ducking anybody with this slate during the season. I don't know if you guys took a look at their schedule. Like, they played Unionville on Saturday night, who's probably going to be one of those, like, sexy District 1 6A teams where you kind of see them do big things and you're like, well, is this for real? That's probably going to be a Unionville. Mm-hmm. They're going to Chester, for God's sakes, before Christmas.
Seriously?
Yeah.
God love them.
Look at that, yeah.
they're certainly stepping outside of they're not doing the ceremonial like retirement tour of you know, we just won the state championship, so let's give ourselves nothing but layups. So I mean, God love them. They're really going above their weight class, and you know, obviously that's going to pay dividends for them, you would think, from the PowerPoint perspective and everything like that. But yeah, I mean, I like what they're doing. They're taking on all comers and seeing how they shake out. So I love it.
That's one thing about being in AA and being good in our district. You really don't have to worry that much about making districts or getting a decent seed.
Mm.
And they have taken advantage of that. I mean, in the past, they played Trinity and people like that. They've done a good job with that, I think. And the other teams, a couple other teams that are 3-0, that to me are a little bit of a surprise. Manheim Central and Octavia.
Yeah, I had Manheim Central starred too, because they lost, you know, Trey Grube and some other good kids, but they still have Aaron Enterline, who's obviously one of the best athletes in any sport in this league. So, and some other kids. Zach Hahn's playing hoops, right? So they should be maybe they're better than we realize.
I would totally concur, fellas, because, Enterline, everybody who's seen him play football and who has seen him play basketball, you're right. The kid's, he's the most athletic freak that the conference has, top to bottom. I don't know who can probably stand on 2 feet and dunk the ball like I'm sure he probably can. Like, he's nuts. But But yeah, it's Mannheim Central is sort of my, like, ooh, look at this type of thing with the 3A teams, because if you sort of had your ear to the ground in the off season, it's like, well, how many other football guys are really going to show up? Mm-hmm. You know, because with them being seniors, and you know, if a good offer comes their way, you know, you just don't know. But but to your point, Gordy, you're right. They have him back, and I saw he was the leading scorer last night with 18 after taking the football cleats off last week. And I really like Zach Hahn as a point guard. I really do. I think he's a bigger addition than he probably gets credit for. Hmm. Just in sort of that leadership role and can do a lot of different things. So I like him a lot. And you're right. I mean, if we're sort of looking for, well, if I called Warwick a prohibitive favorite to make it to leagues 15 minutes ago, who's going to be their challenger in the division? It might be Mannheim Central. It might be Mannheim Central. And Dr. Rera, when you guys were mentioning them, I saw them play on Friday night down in their tourney against Church Farm, which is another one of those Philly schools that it's like, who is this? I mean, it's funny. They actually parked beside me in the parking lot as I'm walking out, because most schools would take a school bus to a game. Well, they took the Chevy Economy van.
Which again begs the question, who is Church Farm's rival? Like Atheist Farm, or who is exactly?
but Dr. Rera, I like too. I mean, and the thing with them being in Section 3, which is where they are, is until proven otherwise, It just always feels like it's going to be LS division, because every time you think they're going to take a step back, like, oh, they're going to lose Ty Burton, surely they're going to come back down to earth. Now, granted, they didn't go 30-0 or whatever that team did during his year, but they're still the top dog until proven otherwise. I don't see a reason to change that. I think Calico is going to have a lot better year than people think, and I don't want to say that whatever they get this year is gravy, but I know Seth Sigmund's really high on his group of kids that are coming up right behind. So I think Calico is going to be a nice little team. But Dr. Rera, I just like the way their pieces fit. They're not going to, like, wow you getting off the bus with sort of, like, athletic talent, but it just seems like this group fits together better, and it does what they need to do as far as making the game baseline to baseline. They know Zach Kirk is sort of like the top dog and the head of the snake. They let him do his thing, but Jason Johnson, a nice little point guard, had a good game against Church Farm. So I just like the way their pieces are coming together, and they beat one of their old rivals in Kennett last night to go 3-0. So I just like Octorera's pieces. So I'm anxious to see what they do in Section 3.
You mentioned a point guard. Does Kirk not have the ball all the time? Because if that's the case, I like that.
He does have the ball in his hands most of the time, at least he did on Friday, but sort of he has some capable Robins to his Batman, if you will, if that sort of makes sense.
He's sort of a Luka Doncic of our league. I could see him leading the league in scoring. Right?
Hopefully he's in better shape.
Yeah, really. And then the other 3-0 team, and this is a team that we kind of expected to be pretty good up in Section 1, is the Comets of Penn Manor.
There you go.
This is sort of you don't want to call it a make it or break it type year, but if you had to sort of peg it that way, I think that's what this is with Penn Manor. This is sort of in the Cedar Crest mold, where this is sort of the group that a couple years ago, it's like, let's see what they do until they get to the 23-24 season, and now that it's here, I mean, fellas, they put a hurting on Oxford last night. I mean, they won by about 50 points. The thing with them is Ethan Benny is, and we're not going to be able to sing his praises loud enough throughout this year, I don't think. He is, I would say he's maybe the best player in the league, and then in a separate argument, you could argue he's probably the MVP. Like, if you take him off of Penn Manor's team, it's sort of a drastic difference. I mean, he does so many things for him, which obviously is why Millersville wanted him to, come across the parking garage, I guess.
Millersville, and hey, I just want to say, you know, I mean, I cover the local colleges, and if Casey Sitzel wants you, you gotta be able to play. I mean, he doesn't dip into the Lancaster Legend League very often. Or ever, so that tells you something, I think.
It does, and he does a lot of different things. He might be pound for pound their best ball handler too. Like, or if they needed him to sort of break the press, he could do that. But the whole thing with them is keeping him healthy and sort of. Obviously, he's not on a pitch count or anything like that, but you just have to be mindful of sort of his workload and let him do his thing without doing too much. But if last night is an indication of things to come, Penn Manor is going to be right there in the thick of it. I think maybe up there with Crest, obviously. And the other thing, too, fellas, is Demir Wesley, he's going to Villanova for football. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's not a ton of big bodies in Section 1, and there haven't been for a lot of years. Mm-hmm. And when you can maybe go Twin Towers-ish, I mean, that's going to be a huge advantage to their benefit. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, Penn Manor, we expected some big things, and thus far they haven't really disappointed. And I said this last night. I took a look at their schedule. They could. Now, they're playing Cedar Crest before, but there's a realistic shot they could get to Christmas undefeated, which It's been a long time since we said that about Penn Manor, so kudos to them.
You know, Hempfield's in the same section. Hempfield lost five of its top six guys. But yeah. A, they have Danny, and B, they have great feeder programs. And C, the kids they have back, I think, are pretty good. Troyer's pretty good. And that kid, Nick Deeg, I saw him play in a state playoff game last year, and I thought he was a tough little guy. I mean, the cupboard is never bare there, I would say. What is your feel for them at this point, Andy?
I'm totally in harmony with what you're saying, Gordy. I think you're right. They do lose a lot of pieces off of the teams that they've had for, gosh, it felt like the last 4 years. It was the same core of guys. But
sure.
Yeah, Troyer is continuing with the LL to York College pipeline, which, you know, God love them. They got something cooking over here. They're taking all the kids. But yeah, the comeback to the pack that I think maybe or some expecting with Hempfield, I wouldn't be so sure about that. I don't think it's going to be a total, you know, first to last type of thing with them. They're, to your point, Danny's arguably one of the best coaches in the league. And you're right, it's always sort of a reload for Hempfield. And are they going to be sort of the trendy pick to win Section 1? No, they're not. But I wouldn't be surprised if they cause a lot of havoc and create a lot of headaches this year. Hempfield's going to be better than I think people assume when all they assume is there's no Miggy Pena, there's no Hester, there's no this, there's no that.
Right.
So, yeah. But they're going to get a good test tonight with LS. So,
oh, yeah. That's
that should be I'm interested to see how that game plays out. Yeah.
Talk about a program that has great feeders. You know, they always kind of reload, right?
Well, LS beat them at this stage last year.
Ah, there you go. So, I mean, Andy, if you had to look at some of the maybe the top five players in the league now, you've touched on some of them. Who would they be?
That's a good question, Gordy. Benny, like I said, probably has to start things off just for his ability to impact the game and be so important to, I mean, honestly, a Section 1 team, which we know that far and away is the big boy division and always has been and probably always will be. Sort of in his same mold, maybe he isn't going to wow you in terms of athleticism, but I like Dallas George a whole heck of a lot at Elko.
Okay.
Nice little point guard. Chris George's son, Chris, obviously the coach at Northern Lebanon, and who ironically, it seems like he always makes the point to mention to me that whenever Elko plays up there, Dallas always has a buzzer beater against him. Without fail. I can't wait to get rid of my kid from the opposition. I can't wait for it. But just really a straw that stirs their whole drink. He's a nice player. Enterline, as we said, is just an athletic freak. And although he's raw from a basketball standpoint, he does so much that you just can't really prepare for. You can't get it in practice. Like, he may not be the best shooter in the world, but he can be the eraser on the back end with shot blocking and – or not even shot blocking, just affecting shots, and it's like, oh, geez, number one's back here somewhere. I got to be mindful of that. Sort of the Cedar Crest boys, I kind of all lump them together because I think they have some – it all seems to work well. And then we already talked about him, but, I mean, Zach Kirk, he just hit 1,000 points the other night. By the way, he's an all-state player, so that's another one of the all-state kids that's coming back into the fold. So What I will say is what I think maybe we lack in, like, natural headline star power this year as a league.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more – the teams are more complementary based to where,
mm-hmm.
yes, there's probably a head of the snake on each one of these teams, but it's not a, oh, my gosh, like, we have to prepare for
it.
And I think Warwick is a perfect example of that. Like, they're arguably one of the two best teams, I think, and – Who is their star? I mean, you could make an argument for, you know, any one of them without having to be a unanimous thing, I think.
Carter Horst?
Team, interchangeable parts. I think Carter Horst, who is another guy who's going to York College, would put him on maybe a first team all league.
Mm-hmm.
And this Caleb Johnson has been really good for them, too, mm-hmm. So far, who was a little bit bigger kid. Yeah, so I would throw him in there too, and you know Troyer from Hempfield.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good. Nice. Chase Smucker, was he in that group too?
Maybe, yeah, that's a good call.
Yeah. And maybe Chase Hurst, though, he's still pretty young though, right?
He is a puppy. He mm-hmm. is a puppy, and he's gonna have to. He's one of those prototypical. What does your role look like, and what does your value look like when you're going from like fifth in the scouting report to like two, mm-hmm. especially as a sophomore?
Sure,
so, yeah,
sure, that's interesting. And this was interesting what you mentioned about Chris and Dallas George. I wonder if it's harder to coach against your kid or to coach your kid. I wonder what that would be an interesting angle to a story to me. You know what I mean?
They're really different. Two very completely different things. I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, I remember, like, years ago, Dave Aldhouse had his two sons on the team. And just, I can only imagine what that was like for them.
honestly, the way things have gone for Northern Lebanon in recent years, I think he would rather have his kid on his team.
interesting. But speaking of coaching, one of the things that the items is that Cole Ports is filling in for Joe Klaesis at Lancaster Catholic because Joe has some health concerns. How does that change anything? I mean, I'm guessing it doesn't change things much for Lancaster Catholic and how they play, but have you noticed anything, Andy?
Well, they're one of the teams that hasn't started yet. They start tonight.
Okay.
But I have seen a little bit of them in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, like, now that we're mentioning teams and players as they're just coming to mind, I mean, I think Crew Wells is going to be one of those names who isn't a headline stealer per se, mm-hmm. but I would be shocked really if he probably doesn't lead their team in scoring this year and affects quite a few games
mm-hmm.
himself, because when talking to some of the section three coaches last year, you know, especially after they played Catholic, they're like, listen, like, I sort of thank goodness Crew Wells was hurt, because he's a difference maker, and that was part of the reason why I think maybe they struggled somewhat
mm-hmm.
is he wasn't totally healthy throughout the entire year, but
mm-hmm.
he seems to be now. But you're right, it's going to be different. I think pound for pound, Joe is the best X and O's coach in the league. He just, I mean, you talk about a coach who always, his teams always get better as the year goes on. Sort of
mm-hmm.
they start off somewhat pedestrian, but then, I mean, as we all know, they're clicking alive at their max level as the playoffs roll around. So
mm-hmm.
it's going to be a bit of a loss, although if there is a benefit to it and sort of a silver lining to it, purely in the coaching's perspective for them,
mm-hmm.
they have an inordinate amount of assistant coaches on staff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Cole can easily lean on any one of, what, six voices that he can have on the bench. So, you know, it'll be interesting. And, you know, good for him. I mean, taking his shot. I was looking at the schedule this today, like, they're welcoming McCaskey in a couple weeks, so it's sort of going to be a trial by fire. I mean, I'm sure that game's probably already sold out with the way those two schools are with each other, as we all know. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it'll be a different look for Catholic, but you know they're going to be fighting for Joe as best they can. And hopefully he's able to make it out to quite a few games, because that's sort of one of those, if they see him in the stands and he shows up, that might be an extra, you know, five or so points that mm-hmm. you can metaphorically put in their column. So
right,
hopefully it works out for them.
2 years in a row, which I would never have believed could happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I gotta believe they're gonna be better.
Yeah, that's true. They're 9-13 last year, for instance. So yeah, that jumped out at me too, Mike. You know,
I want to shamelessly stump for my alma mater a little bit here.
As you should. As you should. They apparently have the best team in Section 1, right?
Well, I think they have a chance to be pretty good. Mm-hmm. They're 2-0. They won by 16 and 18, and they are 11-for-28 from the foul line.
Ooh, ouch. Get in the gym. Get in the gym and shoot some foul shots, for God's sake.
But they do have size. They do have athletes. I think they fit together pretty well. I think they have a chance to be pretty good.
I mean, I saw the previous story, and I saw they have a lot of kids back. Do any of these kids stand above anybody else, Andy? That any of them jump out at you?
Well, Aiden Schomp literally stands above everybody.
Hello.
Else. the other thing with them too is RJ Young is another big man who is one of these, you know, sort of. Disappears, I guess, in some of Schomp's headlines, but he's another kid who's going to make a name for himself here sooner rather than later.
I like him a lot.
Yeah. I do too. They can go, if they wanted to, they could go Twin Towers with them. Mm-hmm. Marquez, the point guard, has been around for God knows how long, 1998 it seems. He's been running the show for Cedar Crest. Owen Churnich is another guard who's just, he's just a leader, right? Like we made him on the all section team for our website last year. He's just a leader. Mm-hmm. They have so many pieces and they could just come in waves. And fellas, what was impressive to me is when I saw them in the summer, and all of them are football guys, right? Like they all sort of travel together. Right. But
that's right.
when they were at Nook, when you saw one of them, you saw like all 12 of them. Like mm-hmm. they all travel together in a pack. And
neat.
And I think with two sons of two coaches on staff who mm-hmm. have, you know, really grown up together and have seen really the golden age of mm-hmm. Cedar Crest basketball when they were young pups,
mm-hmm.
I think that says a lot. And they just have to be so tight knit. Mm-hmm. And you're right. You're right, Mike, to stump for them. I think they're going to have a hell of a year. At least, you know, they certainly hope so.
And this is another interesting side note to this whole, just high school basketball in general, how guys are in basketball shape when football season starts and they're in football shape when basketball season starts. And I just wonder how they negotiate that. You know what I mean?
Well, that's how you explained all those missed free throws for Cedar Crest.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, obviously that can't continue if they want to go deep. I mean, they got to figure that out.
That's ridiculous. Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Well, and it's going to get real for them here this weekend. They're playing Berks Catholic in a City of Basketball Love Invitational thing over at Exeter. Mm-hmm. They play Berks Catholic on Friday, and then I saw they have Downingtown West in the same thing on Saturday. So, yeah, it's going to get real, you know, pretty fast. But two games out of the shoot, not really anything to sneeze at from what I can tell, other than, to your point, Mike, the three-throw shooting, because that's got to improve. That'll send you home.
Yeah, that'll bite you at some point for sure.
If I'm healthy enough, I'm going to go over there on Saturday and kind of look forward to that, because Columbia is also playing in that thing.
Hmm, that's interesting.
Yeah. It's early in the day, so it's no deadline worries. I'm going to head over for that, and I'm looking forward to that. I want to get into with Andy the rules change this year in the sport, where they're counting team fouls by quarter instead of by half. The one game that I've seen this year, which was, actually two, was over McCaskey. I forgot to, like, notice it, you know, I don't even remember, but I've heard some people say they think it's going to be a good thing and they think it has already been a good thing. Hmm. What do you think?
It's going to be another one of these things where as we see more evidence, I think we'll be able to get a better read and sort of a better understanding of it. I mean, it's funny, no matter, I've gone to four games, I think, so far, and there's still a little bit of confusion where it's like, why are we shooting? Oh, that's right, there's five fouls, and this is a new thing. And so there's still some of those growing pains. I don't know. My jury is still kind of out of it. I think sort of what I like the most, maybe more, if this makes any sense, is I like the reset of the number at each quarter. I'm not crazy about the five fouls because, I mean, as you know, if you're going to get like a pressing team and the whistles are going to be way quick, then another team's going to be at the line way early in a quarter. And then, you know, if we're trying to get away from sort of the slog of like end of game foul shooting situation, well, we might have it time after time after time after time. So I don't know. It's one of these. I'm gonna have to see how it shakes out. I'm sort of indifferent to it. It was funny. It's funny you mentioned Cedar Crest. We talked to Matt Johns at Media Day, and we asked him sort of the same thing. Like, hey, you're a basketball hoops head. What do you think this is gonna look like? And he's like, I think it's gonna lead to more improved free throw shooting. Well, I guess if you're gonna go to the line, you're gonna get free practice. Whether you make good on those attempts or not remains to be seen. But yeah. I don't know. I don't really notice a huge difference in it as far as the game itself, but I wouldn't be surprised if you have a team that is ultra and uber aggressive defensively with quick whistles. It's like, oh my God, here we go back to the line, and there's 3 minutes to go in the quarter, for God's sake. So
yeah. And Jason Barretti, who is going to cover, who's going to be the beat guy for this sport for our paper, he said he thinks that there will be less of the endless parade to the line at the end of games.
That I would concur with. It's just the, what are we going to see in the first and second quarter, and how much is that going
to trade off in that way? Yeah, right.
Interesting.
So anyway, what else have we got, guys? Anything else? Anything else for the good of the order?
No, I just want to applaud Andy for maintaining his enthusiasm today after watching a 65-19 game last night. I'm not sure many of us could do that.
I think Jason Colletti have some success, because he's really the coach at Anvil, because he's really a basketball lifer.
Yes.
Really good player at Lebanon High.
Yeah.
And I hope he has a good year, because he is not, he's in a tough spot at Anvil in Section 4 trying to compete with Mennonite Columbia. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I hope he has a good year.
Yeah. And then how many Colettis are there? Because I know there are a bunch. Craig was the oldest one, right?
It's like the guys that played at Duke.
The Plumleys.
Yeah, the Plumleys, yeah. The Colettis and the Plumleys, yeah. Well, I think there's only three brothers, but then Craig's son is now playing at, I think, Alvernia.
Holy jeez, I didn't know that. My gosh.
Yeah, he's playing at Alvernia.
But again, that's one of the other things that I think is kind of neat about high school sports. You see, brothers and sons and whatever else across the year. So that's always kind of neat, too.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah. Garber. How about Garber? There's a name.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. So, yeah. But
Andy,
thank you so much.
No, thank you, fellas. I appreciate it.
We're glad that we. I'm looking forward to this sport. I always do.
Yeah.
Every year. Yeah. And we'll be seeing you on the road. I assume that when Matt Rhule said $2 million to buy a quarterback, you chipped in.
I don't know if he said that as sort of that's just an FYI as the going rate, or if that's we're sort of scared to do it. But yeah, I mean, if it was more of the we're sort of afraid to do it, Matt, hello, I'll help open up the pocketbook. What
there
do you need?
I
tell you what, they've been on the move for the last couple of days. They went down to K-State to see Will Howard. They went to Baylor to see Chapin. They were just in to see McCord yesterday. And now today I see they're out at Washington State for, what's that kid's name? Cam Ward or whatever. So, I don't know if they're going to, sign a fat check for a quarterback, but they're certainly signing fat checks to private pilots. So,
Andy is a Nebraska alumnus.
Yes, I think I remember you saying that. Yeah, there you go. It's time for the Huskers to get back in the mix, that's for sure.
And it might take some divine intervention, but, we'll get there.
Andy, thank you so much.
Let's play volleyball.
Volleyball school, that's right.
That's right.
Hey, thanks, Andy.
Andy, take care. Be well.
I'll see you soon.
Take care. Bye. Andy Herr, ladies and gentlemen. Mike,
I love it.
I mean that sincerely. I do appreciate his enthusiasm for the game. I always have, and it was nice to have him on finally. And then just to really handicap the league, which as you were saying, it's maybe not as good as usual, but it's usually pretty competitive. And I think there'll be some teams that, you know, make a run somewhere along the line. There always are.
There have been so many years over my time of doing this when you kind of sort of felt like it was a down year in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets to February and you can start to see,
mm-hmm.
especially now that we have six classes.
Right.
You can start to see, well, you know, we're probably going to have a pretty decent little postseason here.
Mm-hmm.
And that could certainly happen again.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. And it's always kind of neat when somebody comes out of the woodwork, too. I mean, we all appreciate that when somebody catches lightning in a bottle and, you know, rides it out. That's kind of cool.
And one other interesting thing about this now is the way our league is set up, and I wanted to get into this with Andy and I forgot, but four sections,
mm-hmm.
and two four sections only have, well, section four only has five teams.
I saw that, yeah.
And section one only has 16, so mm-hmm. and so there are no crossovers,
mm-hmm.
so the majority of your games are non-conference games.
Interesting.
So scheduling is really part of it, more than ever, I think, mm-hmm. is part of the strategy of this sport.
Mm-hmm.
Scheduling and trying to get those district points, getting mm-hmm. a good test,
mm-hmm.
while at the same time not hurting yourself for the qualifying for the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really big piece of this right now. We did talk about it a little bit in terms of the approach of some of these teams, and it's easier if you're a smaller school, as we mentioned, with mm-hmm. Mennonite and Columbia.
Yeah.
It's a no-brainer for them to go out and schedule anybody they want to.
Okay, yeah. That'll make for some intrigue, I'm sure. I mean, I was really interested to hear what he had to say about Lancaster Mennonite going to Chester. There's two.
I didn't even know that.
Two worlds colliding there.
That's a culture shock there, my friend.
Yes, it is. But, I mean, God love them for scheduling a game like that. I mean, it's not going to go well for them, I trust, but I think it'll pay dividends down the line.
And last year, when they won the AA state championship, they must have had 7 or 8 losses, I think.
They were 21-8, in fact, yeah.
Yeah, because they played up. They played Trinity, and they played, I'm drawing a blank on some of the teams they scheduled, and also they had injuries. Cam Hurst.
Right, that was the big one. That was the big one.
He was a great player. He had a series of injuries, but at the end of the year, they really put it together, and playing a team like Aliquippa,
mm-hmm.
which was not the most skilled team in the world, but a very athletic, very tough, you know, all those football players from a superpower in football.
Yeah.
And they really were unfazed by that and really controlled that game and played great in the state final.
Yeah, so good for them, and we'll see how that... I mean, you know, there are certain staples of the league every year, and Mennonite would be one of them. Hempfield would be another one. LS has certainly become one.
LS is there, yeah.
So you kind of expect them to be there. I was interested, Jason Guarente, his preseason preview where he mentioned that Penn Manor hadn't won the section title since 1972. That seems impossible to me because they've had some good players through there.
Yeah, they've had some good players, and I didn't think they won in 1972.
Well, okay. Maybe.
I mean, that was that McCaskey. That was the first Pete Horn team, wasn't it?
It might have been.
Yeah, so. I think they won the league with Wally Walker.
Okay.
Wasn't the Lancaster London.
Okay, so it was Lancaster County. So it wasn't even an LL section title. Okay.
I don't know. I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't question. God knows I shouldn't question Jason because he's a pro. But
yes, he is. He is that for sure.
Yeah, that's true. It is sort of amazing. And that's a big school.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is kind of funny that they haven't been better. And this is going to be their best team in a long time, I think.
So we'll see how that plays out, because it very well might come down to them and your alma mater, Cedar Crest, because it seems like those are the... I mean, Penn Manor's 3-0 out of the gate, Cedar Crest is 2-0 out of the gate, so it very well might come down to them, you know.
At Cedar Crest, December 20th.
Okay.
So that will be the first...
Put it on the calendar!
Mark it down.
So, Mike, we wanted to veer in another direction here, and that was the college football playoff. Obviously, there was a lot of a lot of conversation about those matchups and how Florida State didn't get in the mix. So what is your reaction to how it came down to it? As it is, Alabama got in because they beat Georgia in the SEC championship game. Alabama will play Michigan, which is just a ridiculously good game. And then Washington will play Texas in the other semifinal matchup. What was your reaction to the whole Florida State kerfuffle?
I don't blame Florida State for being mad.
Yeah, I agree. I hear that.
I don't blame them for being upset. It's not fair.
No.
But honestly, if I was on the committee, I would have done what they did. I just happened to see Florida State a lot this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have had them around maybe sixth or seventh in the country if they had their number, their quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Without him, I just don't think they were one of the best teams, the best four teams. It's that simple. I think that the Alabama Georgia game, which I got to see quite a bit of, I thought that was not as close as the final score indicated.
Yeah, Alabama.
Alabama really impressed me with that.
Yeah, I thought they were really good. And I guess Georgia has some injuries, right? That might be part of it. But Alabama's still Alabama.
Yeah, and Brock Bowers, they're a great tight end. It's not 100%. But I honestly, I'm a best four teams guy. And I realize that it's not impossible. It's not possible to know.
Right.
Absolutely who the best four teams are. But I just don't think it's right to assume that because you have a zero in the loss column, you're necessarily one of the best four teams. We have five Power Five conferences and four spots in the field.
Mm-hmm.
So some Power Five champion is going to get left out.
Right.
There's no good answer to this. I totally sympathize with Florida State.
Yes.
I sort of admire the committee for knowing that they were going to take the shit that they were going to take for this and still trying to get the best four teams. And I know there are conspiracy idiots out there who think that, even Deion Sanders said this. Well, they're not going to have a playoff without Nick Saban in it. Nick Saban wasn't in the playoffs last year, Deion. I mean, come on.
Yeah, come on.
I don't feel good about it. But I think if I'd have been on the committee, I would have done the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it's a TV show, right? So you want to get the best, the most appealing matchups. And Florida State, for all its defensive prowess, you know, they don't have their starting quarterback, and they looked kind of hopeless on offense in the game against Louisville. And so I get it. Yeah. I mean, I get both sides of it. I get why Florida State would be pissed off, but I also get why the committee did what it did.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel. I think if I'd been on the committee, I'd have done the same thing. And I honestly would have had more of a problem leaving Georgia out than leaving, than leaving Florida State out. But here's the thing that this is why this is so unsatisfying. The week before the SEC championship game, Alabama's playing Auburn.
Right.
And they basically hit a Hail Mary on 4th and 31.
Amazing, amazing play.
In that game, when Auburn rushes two.
Yeah.
One guy spying on the quarterback.
At the 31.
Hello, on 4th and 31?
Yeah.
And obviously if that play doesn't happen, we're not talking about Alabama. Alabama has two losses and they're out of it.
Yeah.
As they were last year.
Yeah, that was Tony Kornheiser's take on it, too. He said if there's anybody that Florida State should be upset at, it's the Auburn defensive coordinator.
There you go. Yeah, that's kind of right. But what Alabama did against Georgia kind of erased that in my mind.
They were really good.
I was on the committee.
Mm-hmm.
Uh, that didn't, you know, I mean, I'm not an Alabama fan, and I know there are a lot of people who think, you know, everybody, the world's in cahoots to favor Alabama or the SEC or something, but whatever. I don't love it, but I think I would have done the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a team and you beat the two-time defending national champion, I think you probably deserve a chance to see.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, what Georgia has been and what they were, that's the other thing about Georgia is, I was not overly impressed with Georgia the first 6-7 weeks of the season, mm-hmm. but they came in November and they played, I think I'm going to draw a blank on one of these here, but they played, I think it was LSU, Tennessee, Ole Miss, back-to-back-to-back weeks and kicked the crap out of all three of them.
There you go.
You know, they were playing well. They were playing well, and Alabama can match them on the line of scrimmage.
And then, that's a big part of it. And me speak.
Got a chance, and I don't think the Florida State could do that.
Yeah, I think that's pretty universal. Yeah. Speaking of Ole Miss, that's who Penn State has in the Peach Bowl. What do you think of that matchup, Mike?
A great offense against a great defense.
Mm-hmm.
Should be good. Mm-hmm. A lot of it has to do with who's opting out.
Man, Chop Robinson being one.
Chop Robinson has already done so, and now, of course, they have. Penn State has three really good defensive ends, so they can maybe play one game without Chop.
Mm-hmm.
They did this year.
Yeah.
He beat up a little bit.
Right.
That's the matchup that I want to see about that in that game. It's just. This great Penn State defense against a team that can really score the ball. Now, again,
mm-hmm.
Georgia really beat Ole Miss up
mm-hmm.
and caused a lot of problems for them. I don't think Ole Miss is likely to have a lot of opt-outs. They don't have a lot of these guys that are going to be
mm-hmm.
in the NFL draft type
mm-hmm.
guys.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they have a slight advantage there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a pretty good matchup. I think Penn State, I think things worked out pretty well for Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even getting in the, I mean, you think of a team like Oklahoma, for example, that got left out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they beat Texas. Why is Penn State ahead of Oklahoma?
Yeah, that's a weird one, isn't it?
Okay.
I didn't even think of I feel like I should know this, but I don't. Has Penn State ever played Mississippi before? I don't know that they have.
They have not. They have never played Mississippi, and they've never played in the Peach Bowl before.
Yeah, so they have a chance to be, what is it, the first team to win all the New Year's six bowls?
Yeah, that is correct.
That's not a bad little, you know, feather to put in your cap. But
Penn State has a good tradition in bowl games.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. I always found it interesting, even when Joe was coaching there, I always thought that, you know, between the end of the regular season and the bowl game, you know, when they were right, they always seemed like they were especially sharp in the bowl game with, like, you know, that extra practice time and maybe a chance to put in a few wrinkles, get some guys healthy. It always seemed like they were pretty sharp usually come bowl time. What's your take on that, Mike?
Yeah, they were usually, not always.
Not always. Yeah, I agree. But I think when they were at their best, it always seemed like they were usually especially sharp in their bowl games, you know?
And Joe would take his team to the bowl site.
Yes.
Really early.
Mm-hmm.
Really early. He was almost completely unique in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he'd have them down there for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Florida or wherever they were going.
Yeah. To the Tampa Bowl.
Different. And you'd have to say that, generally speaking, it worked.
Yeah, I that was always my impression. I remember there were a couple years that they played like Tennessee in the Citrus Bowl, and it would be like a game at halftime, and then Penn State would just like throw it into another gear, and it's like a gear you didn't realize they had, you know, as they were slogging through the Big Ten, you know.
Maybe Joe knew something.
Yeah, there's some evidence of that. The other interesting college football tidbit from this week is that the transfer portal has attracted some pretty interesting names. The biggest one, at least from where I sit, is Kyle McCord, the starting quarterback at Ohio State, has jumped into the transfer portal. What's your take on that, Mike?
I was stunned by that. This is a guy who He's from St. Joseph Prep in Philly, and he started all 12 games this year. Thought he played well. I didn't think he played phenomenal. And by the standards, by the recent standards of Ohio State quarterbacks, he maybe left something to be desired. But something's going on at Penn State.
Gotta be. Gotta be.
I think 11 or 12 guys in the portal. Some of them are not just McCord, some really good players.
Right.
Julian Fleming, who was a kid from Pennsylvania who Penn State really went after, wide receiver, who was the number one wide receiver in the high school class of 2020, he is transferring out, and you would think that there would be a great opportunity at Ohio State for him next year because of the guys that are leaving.
Right, Marvin Harrison foremost among them.
And I can't, Iboku or whatever that
yeah,
is.
Yeah, right, I know.
you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, so, I do.
Those kids are both going to be first rounders. So maybe Ryan Day is shopping himself to get out of there. I mean, I don't know. That's sort of like conspiracy theorist thinking. But you know, the thing about I think Ohio State might have the looniest fan base in the country.
Wow. That covers some ground there, Mike.
I think that rivalry is the most intense, most insane for the fans. I'm talking about the rivalry with Michigan, obviously.
Sure.
The most intense in American sports. I don't think Auburn-Alabama matches that. I don't think Duke-Carolina matches it. It's once a year, and you've got to beat them, or people are out on the ledge. Ryan Day, maybe he's getting a little tired of that. Maybe he's getting tired of the... I mean, Maurice Claret, the Buckeye alum, went on Twitter and called... Hey, I love you, Ryan, but it's time to go. You got to get out of here.
Yeah, what is his record? It's like 40-4 or something ridiculous.
Oh my God, he's something like 57-6, but he's lost 3 in a row to Michigan. That's
oh my God!
People are out of their minds about this.
It's amazing.
Maybe he's had enough, and he probably could go to the NFL because I think he's a really good offensive player. Quarterback coach, game planner, really good offensive guy. Who knows? I don't know, but it's very, very strange.
Yeah, that's interesting to me, Mike. I wanted to touch on this too, this NFL topic. I mean, arguably the two best teams in the league met last weekend in Philadelphia, San Francisco and the Eagles, and the Eagles took it on the chin, to say the least, by the Niners. I suspect they will meet again. They seem like the two best teams. I mean, sometimes Dallas is placed in that conversation, but I want to see Dallas beat a good team. And you know, for San Francisco to win on the road that convincingly, really, I think that's beyond a statement game. What was your take on that, Mike?
Yeah, I think, you know, you can, maybe they are the two best teams in the league, but I think there's some distance between one and two.
Yeah,
right now.
Seems like
it. I'm really impressed with the 49ers. I love the way they play on both sides of the ball. They really fire their weapons.
Yep.
Quarterback is pretty good. And they're really well coached. They kind of look like they're on a mission. I'm sure everybody in that locker room thinks if we'd have been healthy last year, we'd have won the whole thing.
Yeah, which get
the Eagles, I'm sure they're thinking. And that's, you know, I don't know if that's true because the Eagles beat them pretty bad. But I think they're the best team in the NFL. I thought that before the game, and I really think it now, yeah.
They're a very physical team and a very hard-playing team, which inevitably leads to injuries. Like Deebo Samuel, who had such a great game against the Eagles, he's often hurt. Christian McCaffrey's often hurt. And last year against the Eagles in the NFC Championship game, Brock Purdy was hurt, and that was the one guy they obviously couldn't afford to lose. So health will, as it often is, will be a real telling factor in how this plays out. But yeah, right now, if you ended the season right now, you'd be hard-pressed to find a team better than the Niners.
Yeah, and if you look at the way some of the teams in the AFC, how uneven they've been.
Yep, yeah, that's for sure.
Oh, I don't think there's anybody in the AFC that's even close. I would still rank the Eagles number two, honestly.
Yeah, that's sort of where I'm at, and Dallas is probably three. But again, I give that caveat that I gave before about, you know, beating a good team. So we'll see how it plays out. But that was an eye opener for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought that was really an emphatic, and especially at Philly.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of things figured out, and they're good on the line of scrimmage on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Pass rush.
Yeah.
The Eagles wanted offensive line, although probably not healthy.
Yeah.
And things change because of injuries in that league a lot.
That's
but right now, 49ers look pretty impressed.
Yeah. So I guess we've reached the end of our journey, Mike, for another week. But next week we will have our friend Ed Groover on. He wrote a book about the 1972 meeting between the Flyers and the Soviets in the spectrum. So that's his 11th book. So we look forward to speaking with Ed about that. And hopefully he will be present here in the Man Cave since he lives just on the other side of Blossom Hill from me. And hopefully you will be back in the Man Cave next week, Mike.
Yeah, I think so. I hope so. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, man. We've done it again. Thanks very much to Andy. And for Gordy, I'm Mike. We will see you later.
See you later.